Tussle's book and Heidegger's critique, and also David Eagleman's an American neuroscientist, neurosurgeon, who did a program on the brain. That course ended up with a discussion of his view of things from a phenomenological perspective. And at the last minute, because I'm writing the book, I'm looking at new material, I decided to just throw it in and start something new and look at the crisis of European sciences in detail. So there's been some false advertising. For those of you who come new, I hope that isn't going to say, oh, gosh, I really, really wanted to study the Cartesian meditations. That's the one thing that I was interested in, because I don't think we're going to do that. And that's why there are so many people here who I seem to know, because they did that other course. And I contacted them all and said, hey, we're going to do something new. And I think we've got, yes, about half and half. Half have done it and done the previous course and half are new. So my intention in running a new course runs a bit like this. I sort of know what I'm doing this week. I've got a fairly good idea what I'm doing next week, and after that, not sure. But my wish, really, because I always feel this, the kind of way that I go is I like to go deep and not wide. So I would like to go into this book, and I'd probably like to spend 10 weeks doing it. Now we may find that we've the well gets dry. Do you know that we've basically covered all we want to cover in the crisis of the European sciences? But I doubt it. I think there's enough in that one book. There's almost like the whole of phenomenology is in that book. If the well runs a bit dry, we have Heidegger's critique that we can look at. Because in a way, I'm about to take you into Husserl world quite uncritically. You know, ordinarily in a philosophy course, you take a critical stance to a philosopher. And in this course, I'm not really. My intent is to take you in to this, to phenomenology. I'm not saying we're not critical. I'm saying we can only become critical once we've grasped what it is. And to grasp what it is, I think, involves becoming immersed in it. So that's my intent to begin with, to see if we can immerse ourselves in phenomenology and what Husserl discovered. Because it's more of a discovery, I think you'll find if you get into it. It's more that he discovered something, and he wants to share it. It's not that he's got a theory and he's proposing this is the truth. He's discovered something. What he called the phenomenological field. And we have to discover that field too. So it's a kind of a journey we're taking. But this week, he kind of laid the ground in his introduction, and I want to go through that introduction and see he's got an answer to the question, what is philosophy? That you could critique. Or different philosophers will have different ideas about what is philosophy. That's the at a certain level, that's the tragedy of philosophy. It's a subject area where nearly every philosopher has a different idea about what philosophy is. So it would be a good idea to start by seeing what Husserl thinks philosophy is. I guess I should say up front that I'm very sympathetic to his view, even though I'm very sympathetic to Heidegger's view, and they differ, and I'm always, in a way, in a state of indecision between these two great philosophers. I have to be honest about that. Have I got a view? I feel that they're both looking at the same reality from a different place. If you like, so it's not as if you can say he was right and he was wrong. It's almost as if you've got to find your own view on this reality, which isn't some reality over there, I mean this reality. You have to find your own view on this reality that's neither Husserl or Heidegger. You can't say that they're wrong, but of course they, particularly Heidegger, did say that Husserl was wrong. <It's good. laughs> Or when one phenomenologist says another is wrong, they don't mean exactly that one phenomenologist is wrong. Generally, it's a matter of presuppositions that you've got. You've got things that are colouring your understanding that you're not aware of. And so what a phenomenologist, when one phenomenologist criticises another, it's generally at that level, saying you've got some kind of idea that was already operating in you that's coloured what you're seeing. And the idea really is not to argue it out, it's to be of assistance. The right response for a phenomenologist when something like that happens is to say thank you for pointing that out, not, oh my God, no, I'm right. Do you know, there are two quite opposed ways of approaching philosophy. And phenomenology is, if you're within that phenomenological community, then it's a community of cooperation and not argumentation. You may have come across philosophy, particularly analytic philosophy, which would be the philosophy of our Anglo-American culture. It's combative and argumentative, and phenomenology is not like that. That was a kind of a long, rambling introduction, and I would like to go around and just have a quick sense of everyone here and a tiny bit of biography, why you've come. And I did ask for what is philosophy, and I think, was it you, Marcus, did you send me?
Yeah.
Yeah, you did. To which, to my great shame, I was so busy preparing the lecture slide, I haven't read it yet. Michael, so I want to say, Michael sent me something. I haven't checked River today, but if you've got anything for me, we're not going to have time to go through it today, but either send it to me on River. I asked for a 200-word piece on what is philosophy from where you're coming from. It's not, the idea is not, it's not, I'm going to say, oh, no, that's rubbish. I actually want to know what you think philosophy is. I actually want to know that. What you've come in, the view you've come in with to begin with. So it's not like a university assignment. It's of actual interest to me where you've got to. And this is true for the people who've done it before. Maybe you've already done your 200 word, what is philosophy? I think it might have changed now. You know, it's a moving thing. And it's partly just to get you in the mind of possibly recognising that you don't know what philosophy is, but you've got a kind of a few scraps of ideas that you've got from our culture. Because I think the question, what is philosophy, is another phenomenological question that we could, it's almost, it doesn't have an answer. You know, it's another one of those questions where the whole thing of going into what it might be is educational in its own right. So yes, so can we start with James? Yes.
So while we're here.
Yeah. Well, and a little bit of background. If you don't have to tell me about your background, but whether you studied philosophy before or you've got a degree already, or you know.
No, I haven't. But I've studied a bit of philosophy at the Free University with some other tutors, so that's, I haven't covered Husserl or Heidegger or any of the sort of things that were mentioned in this course, so that's all quite new to me.
Yes.
I've studied a bit of psychology, and I think phenomenology came up in that as well.
Yes.
So it's a term, I can't remember exactly what it is, but it's a term that I have sort of covered a little bit. What is philosophy? The study of sort of thought
Well, no, there's no right or wrong here. We're going to go into really what philosophy is almost every week. You know, hopefully, maybe deepening it as we go. So, yes, yep, Maria.
Did philosophy briefly as part of my degree. Ages ago, it was young, it was boring, it was like, I have to go there. And got to the point in my life where I truly want to know what it's all about, especially in a present, ever so changing world. I'm kind of losing myself, so probably here I'm going to get some core about myself and the answers, maybe, I don't know. It just probably looking for directions.
Yes. So that, and you're expressing a kind of a core aspect of philosophy, in some sense being about meaning. I would say, what is the meaning of my life, is a philosophical question. Not saying that this course is going to give an answer to that, but I think it's going to give a
direction.
A direction into how you can go into that. Yes. Nicolette?
I'm John's wife, as some of you know. I've done all these courses and I've really enjoyed them. I'm not a philosopher, or I'm a nurse, mostly in oncology and palliative care. Just recently I've taken a break. So I've taken I don't quite know where I'm going yet, but I've taken a break. I still am on the pool at the hospice in Worthing, at St Barnabas, and I was last teaching there as well as a lecturer in palliative care. And I'm looking at a different direction, but I just come because I really enjoy it. That's really, and I really get something out of the readings, and it's really nice to find a place where I actually enjoy this, and
yes, just for your
own. I'm not a philosopher, I'm not an academic philosopher or anything. I have degrees in nursing and that.
Yes, it's an interesting thing that I actually get to talk to Nicolette about philosophy much more easily here than when we're just together, the two of us. So it's quite fascinating that we've managed to.
Yeah.
There's a kind of a philosophical bridge come from Nicolette just attending the classes. It's been really good. Yes. Marie?
Hi, I've done the Philosophy of Consciousness course before. I was interested to come along and see how it was going to be different. I'm going to be doing a 2-hour workshop on critical thinking on Monday evening, and so I thought I'd come along as well to kind of see how critical thinking engages with philosophy,
or at least phenomenology. Yes.
With phenomenology, because I think it was very interesting when you said that we're suspending our critical stance in order to grasp what is, to become immersed in what is Husserl's discovery.
Yes.
Which is something I find extremely difficult to do.
Yes.
So I think, because I have my degrees in sociology and I've got a very cut and dried sort of mind, so I think it's been a real stretch for me to kind of try and stop doing that.
Yes. Yes. And where Maria's we've already, because we've done, you've done both my courses actually. So Maria's really good at telling me what she thinks. That's really useful, because in a way I often go back after a class and something Maria said bothers me, you know, and I have to think about it myself. And so I think you'll come to see Maria's role as we carry on. Although you might not be able to attend the whole course, you were saying.
No, that's right, because there's another one starting soon.
Yeah.
Yes.
At the same time.
Yeah, on Saturdays. Yeah.
Yeah, it's about, what was it?
Something.
No, that's Monday at 7 p.m.
It's Monday evening.
Yeah.
But there is another one that starts soon on Saturday, they clash with this one.
Yeah, it's not a philosophy one, though.
No.
I think
the psychology was it.
Research methods?
No.
You should be teaching that.
Yeah.
Community psychology?
No, it's research methods. Yeah, that's right.
Research methods.
Yeah,
oh,
good. So that's your excuse is gone, really.
Oh, I
don't think the philosophy courses clash. Oh, right, really?
They don't clash.
I was mistaken. I will come to this.
Yes. I just want to... Alex, carry on. I just want to...
My turn about what was it philosophy? I'm more like thinking of stuff, religion, philosophy and everything as a natural phenomenon. How it came to be. How did it happen when people started thinking about things in a peculiar way? But like engaging in that, those kind of, in this thought patterns and calling it, oh, this is philosophy. So if you want to take it as like two separate things, one is engaging and experiencing these kind of peculiar way of thinking about things and just abstracting it by just looking down at them and saying, well, what the heck was that? But what is that? So since early age, I've started, maybe 15, 16, I've started thinking in this kind of philosophy and experiencing this kind of, this like question and answers. Is this like listening to someone? So if I'm going to call what that is, I actually have no idea.
It's a certain state of questioning.
Yeah.
Yes. Which I think is also in the world of phenomenology, Heidegger branched off and just became Heidegger. But you could say that Heidegger is the for me, he's the person who really developed that sense that the core of philosophy is a pure questioning. And it's another idea of philosophy is you just have to learn how to question, how to really question. Just to give a... Not questioning is to be asking a question at a certain level of yourself when you've already got the answer. You might not be aware of it, but the answer is in what you've already presupposed when you ask the question. And Heidegger's, brilliance was just looking at the whole process of asking a question is to discover all of your own presuppositions that are already in the question. And in a way, that your question sort of answers itself by you realizing what you already believed. So I've taken... I said I was writing a book, and the book really is just the one question: what is intelligence? And just going into that, and once you get the idea about how to question, it starts to things just start to open up. The question doesn't have intelligence is, give it to me in 7 words. You might have a 7-word answer at the end, but that's not the answer. The answer was what you went through in the question. Questioning is another state of mind to our normal, what we would call, Maria, critical thinking, which I feel like being provocative, which pretends to question, but already has a certain method, a certain...
Axioms.
Yeah, anyway, we won't... I'm sorry. I don't want to start. That's it.
Russia.
Yes. reckon?
So I have I have 2 degrees. So, you know, in that way, you're talking about intelligent, you know, you could say that I've managed that sort of academically. But I have a real doubt in my... I cried this morning trying to read the text, basically, because I read it and I thought, I don't understand it. And so I have a real, to philosophize, other people were able to do that. Other people, you have to be a certain intelligence, you have to have a certain knowledge of the world to be able to be, to philosophize. And yet, in Germany, we use it a lot, saying just like, oh yeah, we just philosophize when you talk to a friend and you don't talk about the facts of something, but about sort of more the meaning around it. And I went to college and I did critical thinking, and I remember struggling so much with it, because I get information and I take it, and there's like sort of again a belief of my intelligence of who am I to question it, you know, if somebody else says, oh, these are the facts, then who am I to question it? And so I guess for me there is a real longing for being able to question things and feeling that I can, and to feel that I can question things and not just accept them because somebody else said them.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, so the texts of those things, it's like I read it again and I just don't quite grasp it, and I don't know what it is. I don't think it's necessarily the language, but it's maybe the not having a context of understanding it. So, for example, this, the crisis of European science, it doesn't mean anything to me at this point.
Great. No, I mean great as in... it's great that you've got to that place, because that's almost what the class is for, in a way. You know, it's I expect somebody who hasn't been immersed in philosophy to bump up against Husserl's main major work and say, what's going on here? But to have got to a point of wanting to understand it but not understanding it is the very point where I can come in. You know, that's sort of the role of the classes, in a way, is that I can give you a way in. Because it's not... essentially, when you get the idea, I think, of what Husserl's talking about, he's coming from a place of inspiration that it's not like the language looks. It's not complex at all. It's quite simple, but the way in is not easy, because, as you say, there's an entire context there, historical context. He's talking to his fellow philosophers at a time of deep crisis, which is why he called the book The Crisis. And in a way, we do have to look into the context of where he's coming from. But at the same time, he's speaking of an intellectual culture that we've lost touch with. That our very education system has lost touch with its own origins. So in a way, part of the purpose of a course like this is to try and reconnect us with a sense of our own origins, because we're in a I think our culture is in a state of collapse.
It feels that way.
Yeah, but it collapse at quite a deep level. But that doesn't mean there's nothing of value in it. One way that I would understand phenomenology is, but I don't know if you know Eliot's poem The Wasteland. T.S. Eliot's poem The Wasteland. It's quite a famous poem. I'm not saying we study The Wasteland, because we could spend a course on The Wasteland, but That was his description of the of Europe after the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
He was in that poem. He was trying to. He was looking as a poet into what's left in the wreckage. You know, and I would say, phenomenology is something that's left in the wreckage, but of course we've been severed from it. You know, we go to school and we just learn a bunch of facts, right? We get no coherent view of where we've come from.
And we're not taught to wonder, we're just taught the facts.
Yeah.
There is no curiosity in left.
Well, it's, I mean, I've taught at the university, right, so I'm watching it and how it's going. And it's becoming a kind of a training establishment for people to go to work, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's partly why I'm in the Free University.
And just a question, what is the, I mean, so what I'm trying to get my head around, and I did look it up, but what's the difference between philosophy and phenomenology?
Well, the difference between philosophy and phenomenology for Husserl is there isn't any difference, because phenomenology is the true teleology of what the Greeks intended. So in a way, he's saying, and this whole book is saying, that there's something like a true philosophy, and phenomenology is it.
The purpose.
Yeah.
The true essence?
Yes, it's the true. Well, he uses the word teleology. Or,
the aim.
Yes.
The aim.
That there was something inborn in philosophy. That has come to, he thinks, has come to fruition in phenomenology. But then, the reason that there's phenomenology and philosophy is there are all these other philosophies who think that philosophy is something else, who think that Husserl is just, I can't help pronouncing it. Can you live with it?
Yeah, or you call him Edmund?
Yeah, call him Ed. Yeah. Somehow it doesn't seem right, doesn't it? He's just a kind of a chap you cover in your undergrad philosophy. You know, you get a 2-hour slot in a lecture, and he's done it. Yes.
Would Husserl say that phenomenology covers all the areas that philosophy is usually interested in? I mean, you know, it is a very, very vast area, and you've got areas like logic, or you've got areas like moral philosophy, or this kind of thing,
yeah.
Where I'm not really sure how a phenomenologist would tackle.
So his for instance, in the way of logic,
yeah.
He would say the task of phenomenology is to take logic and show how it's entirely rooted in our immediate experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that he would say the phenomenology's job is to ground something like logic in the reality of our immediate experience. And the same with ethics. He would say everything, the task of philosophy is to find the ground of everything. And the ground of everything is our immediate experience, if only we know how to inquire into it.
Sometimes when I try to understand things, I think also about the opposite of that. For example, when you say the word phenomenon, what's the opposite of the noumenon? So what's a noumenon? Noumenon is logic and facts and how that things exist as themselves, but the phenomenon is the way we understand and experience and how this appear in our internal kind of theatre.
Yes, but the word phenomenology is a kind of a, you know, another way of looking at it is Husserl came across something in his early philosophizing, and he thought I better think of a name for it. And I'll call it phenomenology. But I think if things had gone the way he pictures them, even in this introduction, it wouldn't ever have been called phenomenology, it would have just been called philosophy.
I've been looking at, as part of another course, the philosophy of Epicurus. And it strikes me that there's a link between
chapter 2, because Epicurus believed that we should look at our experience, and that our experience was telling us the nature of human reality.
Yes.
So
now, I'm not, apart from a vague sense of what Epicurus had to say, I'm not able to really comment on that.
Oh, he didn't write about it in himself.
No. But I would say that the other core aspect of phenomenology is the deep question is, well, how do you look into experience? Because, of course, many, many people have looked into experience, and you generally find that everybody discovers something different and contradictory when you introspect. There was an introspectionism in psychology in the 20th century that collapsed because there was no objective standard to say what you are seeing when you look at your experience is true. How can you... That was the dilemma of psychology. If somebody reports something about their inner experience, how can you determine whether it's true or not? How can there be any kind of agreement or any kind of science from looking directly at your own inner experience? That doesn't mean you can't do psychology, but you do. You have a psychology of what's becoming neuroscience.
And is that on the sort of the first page where it says something about the positive science, so mathematics, physics, and to an extent also psychology? That they all sort of there's so what I've understood the little I understood I think was that so that you have these hard fact science and then you've got the ones like psychology where you do have an individual experience and that we don't sort of put enough emphasis or interest in those that are not just facts but also meaning. Did I get that right?
Well. Like all of philosophy, isn't it? You're opening up a whole area there that I think we're going to probably go into about what is objective science, what does it mean to be objective, and this whole division between the objective and the subjective. At the moment, they're words we use, but it's not. I would hesitate to think that we're clear about what they mean, even. Do you know? Once again, I would say phenomenology is a kind of a field where we look into experience that even precedes that precedes this idea that there's an objective and a subjective. But we have to be very careful. The whole idea that you can divide the world up into the subjective and the objective came out of our culture. You know, we almost have to look into the history of our culture to see where these divisions came from, which I think we're going to do. So you're right. We were touching on that, what Husserl was talking about positivism, and the collapse of psychology in the 20th century, because there was no reliable way to observe experience, not even a clear understanding of what it is. I'm actually, you know, right now in the book I'm writing, I'm just in this. Yes. Joe.
Hello.
Hello.
Good.
Yes.
Well, I didn't do my homework, so I'm going to have to wing it.
Yeah. We only want to know about Joe, didn't we?
What, like history? Or
well, just...
introduction?
Yes, yeah.
So, I studied philosophy in college, and didn't grab me. I failed. It was history of philosophy, which is fine, but I think at that age, 17, it was a lot to manage alongside getting stoned constantly. I had no intention of coming back to philosophy, and then the Free University came here, which is I don't work here, but I work for the council, so I was kind of hustled. I'm going to use the word hustle, not hustle. Kind of
yes.
I was hustled into here, and the first course that I took was this course in 2016. I kept coming back to it because I think I understand bits and pieces, but I'm not able to explain to people what this course is about without reciting something that I've read.
Yes.
Or something that I've written down, and that irritates me. And I keep going back to the first philosophy book. Well, the first philosophy book that I was given was Sophie's World when I was 15. And I really gobbled that up. And then I was given Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance. And I keep going back to it because this. How do we look into experience and I get lost in this kind of language, and it works for me to use what he's done to use the motorcycle to describe philosophical stuff. Works well for me, and I guess that I'm trying to find my own analogy. If I could use my occupation to somehow explore phenomenology, that would be ideal. And that's the project that I'd like to work on.
Yes.
Because you've got to have some sort of context.
Yes.
You've got to have some... I mean, I had loads of thoughts that I was going to come along with, and they've all just been mashed around. You know, like a pinball machine. Every time anybody says something, I'm like, okay, well, maybe this, maybe that. I had a thought the other day that philosophy came from the paradoxes in the Bible, and then I remembered that people were philosophizing before the Bible, so I can't draw on that.
Yeah, before the New Testament.
Yeah. We had a look at some... I got interested in Lucretius. We did a course with Charlie, and I can only just like post-it notes stick up this and this, and if people know what I'm talking about, great. With the whole sort of paradoxes in the Bible, I mean the context, not context, but the presupposition of being God. If you don't have that, then what are you going to do? Where do you go from that? I could keep talking. This is not a great introduction.
Hello. Come in. And you arrive. If you sit there, you're the next person to introduce yourself.
I'm so sorry to be late.
I feel I want to just say a couple of things before I forget. Because you were just at the beginning, I was thinking, oh yes, I get the sense, and I find that in a way that you've got an understanding of phenomenology from coming to the classes, and you were saying, but whenever anyone asks you, you're not able to express it in your own experience, which I know that place.
Mm.
I know that place from. Teaching. Do you know, like, there's a whole gap between reading something and thinking you understand it and being able to stand up and explain it to someone else. And it has to go into your own experience at a certain level. And there's something weird about phenomenology. I hope you've noticed. The weird thing about it is, I say it because it's so true, you can't remember it. You know, it's because most things you learn, they're memorable. You've got a bunch of stuff, and you can kind of file it away in your memory, and then you can say, you want to know about that? And you kind of look back into some corner of your mind, and in some way that you don't quite understand how, out it comes, and you can say, oh, blah, 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 blah. But with phenomenology, you actually almost have to enter into the place of phenomenology to speak about it, and you have to have someone who's in that place with you. Do you know, it's like water off a duck's back otherwise, and it's partly, we create, if it works, we create a space in this class where you can talk about phenomenology, but the basically, it's quite interesting how it works. We have to create it together. So it's quite hard to talk about it outside of this.
Yeah, I'm keen to use objects because I find I wouldn't know how to demonstrate an understanding from my own experience. But I'm interested in Piersick. He's not particularly talking about phenomenology, but he's using.
He's talking about quality.
Quality, yeah.
Quality. Undefined quality.
Yes. I mean,
what's that?
What he does with, you know.
Sorry to butt in, but what's that? I think his undefined quality is phenomenology, by the way. I think there is a link. But
yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Jacob spent a lot of energy trying to explain inductive and deductive reasoning.
Great.
And it just didn't sink in. And I remember Piersick had done it with the bike. And I don't know, maybe it's... I am interested in people, but I'm quite a solitary person. I spend a lot of time with objects. And not so much time with people.
Yes.
So I'm
less stressful.
yeah, I find being amongst people very stressful. I'm a lone worker. I live with somebody in a house share now, which is socialising me a little bit, but I,
Yes, philosophy is a solitary business, isn't it?
Well, except for now. except for now. It's both, right? In a way, it's both. It's a deeply inward thing, but it is also possible to speak like in a philosophical space with other people, which kind of completes it. It's part of it is expressing. Otherwise, it's mysticism.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome. We're just doing a quick, and as you can see, it's not so quick because we've been there for an hour and we haven't quite got around yet. But would you like to just tell us a few things about yourself? I know we're throwing you in and you don't have any context, but.
Polly.
Polly?
Is that Polly?
Polly.
Yeah.
Which I'm just thinking.
This sounds like the most interesting thing to study. Done a little bit of philosophy, but not phenomenology. I'm interested in everything outside the realm of what we can see, you know, the other side of the secret part of life, you know. Always have been psychic stuff and all of that. And on my own, I've always studied a lot of books about that, so hopefully I've got a context. And in my interpretation, I would say phenomenology is energies. Most things are energies. Everything comes down to energy, to the cosmology, vibrations.
So,
that's put very simplistically, but then I do that.
Yes.
Obviously, it's not simplistic.
But there's a level here where phenomenology is. It treats. We haven't actually spoken about phenomenology, but it does treat everything as a phenomenon, including energy. So I think we have to. I think you'll be. If we can get into it, I think you'll find it's a different way of looking at the transcendental. So the book itself says transcendental phenomenology. So clearly there's a transcendental aspect to it, and I think you're saying I'm interested in what's transcendent to this immediate experience. But phenomenology is strange in that way, in that it takes immediate experience extremely seriously, but it sees in that experience that there's, especially for Searle, that there's something that he describes as transcendental subjectivity that is behind experience. So we'll see where we go with that. Yes. Oscar.
Hello. I certainly, from my experience of philosophy, I think I've realised less and less that I really have any idea what it is. And I think, it's always from some kind of questioning of have we got it all right? But we're afraid to sort of ask that question, such basic questions like that. And then sort of phenomenology, as Heidegger talks about the mood and anxiety, how we stopped in our tracks, I guess, for questioning. And I think this is like a perfect sort of kind of environment when you're not on your own, sort of with those types of questions. It's kind of mediated with everybody's same kind of barriers. I don't have a proper idea of how to do with what's going on.
See, I'm sorry to be smiling, but that's a great place to be, you know. The more we get to a place where we don't know what philosophy is and we don't know what we're doing, the more I like it. Because that's the kind of place that we're sort of seeking, you know. It was Socrates, wasn't it? That was fated somewhere as being the wisest man because he didn't know anything. In a way, if you're going to do any kind of philosophical inquiry, you have to get back to a place of not knowing anything. Even though, we're trying to understand this piece by Husserl, and in a way requires us to know something. It's paradoxical. Michael?
my journey on philosophy started when I was really young. About 6 or 7 years old, when I learned that people die, and that's all. I've been thinking about stuff like that for all my life. I had the chance to study some fragments of different philosophers as part of my studies, a little bit of Marx and Engels, critique on the German ideology, some Althusser on ideology, a little bit of Foucault and the Judith Butler and stuff like that. But for me, philosophy always seemed like, as I wrote in my small text I sent him, philosophy seems like a very, very long dialogue between different philosophers, like a never-ending sequence of theses and antitheses and the criticism and observation and stuff. And it's very difficult for me to find the starting point, Where do we start from if you want to know what philosophy is and stuff like that? And from what I've heard, I feel that this whole course would be a good starting point. And when I was reading the small passage you've said with us, I found out that I have been thinking also of some of what Husserl is saying, this critique in the positivism, we can all only know what we can, mathematically prove what we can. And about the fact that the sciences and the psychology has lost its, has abandoned this quest for answers and the deeper questions of philosophy and life and stuff like that.
Yes, you're touching, actually, it's, you're touching right on what we're looking at today, aren't you? Because Searle does have a kind of an idea that philosophy is meaningful, that despite the apparent chaos of it all and all the apparent contradictions of what all the philosophers are saying, there is some deeper inner current of meaning running through it. And his intent in the beginning of the book, the whole first sort of section of the introduction, is to try and draw out a certain meaning that he sees in the whole progress of what philosophy is, which, in a way, like all philosophers, I know we're not going to, we have to be critical in a way. I look at Maria when I say this. It is only Husserl's view, but at the same time, I'd like to go into it. I'd like just to see if we can grasp this sense of meaning that he sees in philosophy before we reject it out of hand. Because in a way, you would say the modern philosophy has rejected out of hand that there could be such a narrative. You know, there's the word. It's just a narrative. Husserl's telling us a story. We can't decide whether it's true or not. Whereas Husserl doesn't think he's telling us a story. He thinks this is the inner telos, this is the inner meaning of humanity itself that he's uncovering. You know, it's quite, for him it's quite central. So I'd like to do a sort of a two-way thing here. I'd like to say, all right, this is Husserl's view. And in a way, you have to really enter into it to absorb what he's saying. But at the same time, we have to see that he may be wrong. I feel like a small speech about history and meaning is due anyway. And this is sort of my view on philosophy. Because the truth of it is that we all end up with our own sense of meaning, of what's the meaning of my life, even if that sense of meaning is, it doesn't have any meaning. Do you know, you can't get away from it. Feeling that there's no meaning is a kind of meaning, right? You don't get away from that. And I've come to see almost that it's a kind of a task laid on each one of us to find a meaning, even though it might not, we got a kind of an idea that there might be the meaning, you know, the one and only, the ultimate meaning, and that one day we'll all discover it. But in a way, it's almost a creative act to be able to find meaning in your life. And Husserl, in a certain way, is finding meaning in philosophy. Is a creative act. You know, I feel like one way to look at it is it's a kind of a work of art, what he's been able to do here, the meaning that he's been able to see in it. You know, that we could admire it like that without it necessarily falling into a it's true, it's false. To a certain extent, I embrace what he says, not because he's argued it or anything, but because it corresponds with something in me. Because I think he's talking about the human psyche. I think he's seen something in the human psyche in the history of philosophy. And in a way, it's subjective. That meaning that he's seen is a meaning in the human psyche, something that could have become a culture on the earth, and in attempted to become a culture on the earth. That's what he means by European culture. But whether it becomes the comes to full fruition is up to us. Do you know, it's not a done deal. And I think you got the gist really in relation, if you had a rough read through, the gist of where we are today is the crisis that he was talking about of European sciences is much worse. Do you know what I mean? That's a particular story. There's another story, that maybe if you saw Elon Musk, his story of Western culture is, it's amazing, you know, it's all going to be great. All we need is more technology, more electric cars, more trips to Mars, you know, it's all going to end happily. Yeah, do you know what I mean? That's another meaning that you can put on our culture. The reason that I take Husserl seriously is because I find that it corresponds with something that's already in me. Anyway, I feel like I generally have a break at 12, but I feel we should have a break now because we've done a once around the table, and then I've got a kind of a point where I think I'd like to just go into looking at the reading. So should we take a, say, 10-15 minute tea break and then get into the...
This is tea break.
Where do we know each other from?
Do you think a tea break? Nicolette's question. It's getting a bit early. All right, it's not a tea break. We're going to have a formal tea break later. This is just a quick stretch your legs, go to the toilet.
Trust for you? Psychosynthesis Trust in London? Did you do a counselling introduction course?
At Vardeen?
Not at Vardeen, no.
Where did you do it?
At City College.
So from you look so familiar, and I'd love to know where you're from.
You don't need to, but
So the only thing is, if you're on Rimmer, you can see the weekly material, the readings and stuff.
Yeah, I didn't have a chance to go over it all.
Yeah.
I got very confused in the class, so I haven't looked at it since because I felt like I was confused. And I'm not good with technology at all. I didn't want it to be the reason I didn't turn out. I thought I mustn't let it stop me. Because Matt said you had to properly done it before you turned out.
Well, then do what Matt says as well, but as far as I'm concerned, it's just a matter of you being here and a matter that you can find. But when I put stuff up on River, you can see it.
I haven't done the reading. I mean, I don't know who's at all.
No. Well, that's all right.
We did sort of the...
I'm assuming that people have never read it, so I'm not assuming any background.
I only did a term of it, and it wasn't that much. But we did the English and Kant and all of that.
The English ones, you mean?
Philosophers.
Locke, Berkeley, and Hume.
Yeah. Kant's the only one that isn't English, I know. We did a bit of that. And I got on well with it, but I know there's just so much. And one term wasn't really very much.
No.
I've touched on it.
Yeah.
Really.
Well, no, I know the. I know how it is. But we're just going to go into the cell and just this one book. So
when was he in his books? Was he
on? He died in 1938.
Yeah. So
he's very recent, relatively west. Hello.
So that's actually when my dad was born. Yeah, I wasn't getting a context, but I should have read it all, shouldn't I?
Yeah, I think he was born in 1870s, something like that. Yes, please.
Nothing.
Yeah, we're doing Introduction to Phenomenology, but we're doing it. It's different this year.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, we're going to go into Husserl in detail and another book of his.
Brilliant.
So you know, if you wanted to
yeah.
rock up, it won't be a repetition.
Good.
But it rarely is anyway.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, I will. I why am I listening from the other room?
Are you? Can you hear it? Can you? Does it get through? Does it get through the wall?
I can move about and stuff. Hello.
I just remembered I haven't turned this.
Just
oh dear.